Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind.
My Money and Me with Sumitra Naidu every Tuesday from 8 to 9 p.m.
Kaya FM 95.9.
To be talking about insurance. Now, I don't know about you, but I hate paying insurance. It's one of those things that you have to decide whether you're going to do it or you're not going to do it, and often you have to do it. It's one of those grudge purchases that I like to call it. I'm talking now to Darpana Harkison. I'm sorry, I hope I said your name right. Darpana Harkison.
Perfectly, absolutely perfect.
Thank you so much for your time. So Darpana is a senior assistant to the Ombudsman for Short-Term Insurance. Thanks so much for joining me. And I hate the I'm sorry if you're offended by the fact that I say that I hate insurance, but I do know that it's something that we have to take out. But I think when we're doing it, because it's such a grudge purchase, we go into it feeling miserable that we have to part with this money, and you never know, you know, you may not use it, but you have to constantly pay for it. You know, hopefully the day never comes when something big happens that you have to dip into the insurance, but it's something that you have to do. But let's look at some of the mistakes that people make. We did see recently, you know, we played out in the media and social media. There was just so much of activism around the insurance case where the insurance company didn't actually want to pay out the claim because the client didn't fully disclose his illnesses, even though he died from something else apart from the illness. These are tricky things. It's also like, you know, when you're doing short-term insurance for your car, if you don't actually say that the car's been in 5 accidents and you're insuring it now, this is important information, right, Darpana?
That's absolutely correct. Let me just make the distinction, though, up front. The matter that the case that you're referring to is obviously the Ganes matter, which dealt with the long-term insurance. So in the instance of short-term insurance, I mean, during the sales conversation, the insurer will obviously ask you to make certain disclosures. And one of the disclosures that most motor vehicle insurers will ask you to disclose is with regard to any previous losses or claims that you've had. That's where a lot of consumers will not provide correct information, or alternatively, when the complaint comes to us, then they're like, no, I didn't understand the question, or I forgot that I had a previous claim. So, yeah, those are some of the challenges that we deal with.
Okay. But those are, you know, those are real things that do happen. Sometimes, you know, maybe they really, really forgot. But if you look at insurers, you know, they designed their sales questionnaire so that it can readily draw out from consumers the accurate answers. What if the questions asked by the agent are not specific enough to trigger that kind of memory of, you know, maybe driving over a pothole or, you know, or having an accident 5 years ago and now you changing insurance? I mean, 5 years ago is a long time. Maybe it was a really minor accident. Is that really, does that count it as misrepresentation?
On the face of it, if the question that was asked by the insurer is clear and concise, and if the insurer does not disclose the information, yes, then that would amount to a misrepresentation. However, most insurers will not ask you to disclose all losses. I mean, they would probably ask you to disclose losses between 3 to 5 years. And if you're unsure of the answer, the best answer to give is just, you know what, I'm really not certain. Can you give me some time so I can contact my previous insurer and get a full list of all my previous claims? The best answer would be, I'm not sure. If you are not sure, then that is the best answer to give.
Okay, so I didn't realize that you can actually say that, I'm not sure. You know, misrepresentation, criminal intent or not, how blurred is that line, though?
The relationship between an insurer and a consumer is based in the civil law. And so the insurer needs only demonstrate on a balance of probabilities that the consumer misrepresented him or herself during the sales conversation. So only in criminal law must the state prove its case beyond reasonable doubt. So it's not actually about criminal intent. Essentially, you know, we would look at the manner in which the question was asked in order to establish the consumer's intention during the sales conversation.
When you look at, so you're looking at the South African context, right? We have so many different languages. If there are language barriers, so you have somebody that's speaking a specific language and they don't necessarily understand the English very well, this can also be lost in translation when you're doing the questions. And you have a lot of companies at this point that do everything over the phone. You signed up on the phone. Could this also become a problem? How do we cater for this?
It could be a problem. However, most South African insurers would agree to doing the sales conversation with you in the language in which that in the language in which you are fluent. The legislature also provides that the sales conversation must be clear and concise, and also that the insured must be in a position to make an informed decision regarding the acceptance of the policy prior to inception of the policy. Mm.
So then, I mean, that can be held. And obviously, a lot of this is kept on tape. I mean, you know, if there's any issue or any dispute, you can actually pull out the tapes and listen to that and take that to court.
Absolutely. Most sales conversations in South Africa take place over a telephone conversation, and we would then listen to the recording in order to establish what the intention of the parties was. The difficulty, though, is that, you know, because the conversation is rare and because everything is recorded, it is difficult to establish the intention, and also it's difficult for us to challenge the insurer's rejection of the claim if the question was clearly asked and if the insured, you know, agrees and accepts that, you know, when the insurer makes a disclosure that, yes, I've understood the conversation and I've understood the question being asked, and the insured then agrees with that. How do we then challenge that?
I see. And then, you know, in terms of it, you know, it is very interesting because you often hear these complaints, and I'm sure you're getting these complaints at the ombudsman's office. Insurers, and I'm not naming anybody, but, you know, often, you know, consumers say that the insurers didn't want to pay out, and, you know, some of my reasons weren't valid. I think that I have a strong case, but I'm not, you know, going to take it forward. I can't afford to take this forward. There seems to be that perception out there that insurers will look for everything possible not to pay out. How then does a consumer actually make sure that they're on the right side of the law, they're doing everything correctly to ensure that they do get a payout when something does go wrong?
The important thing is that during the sales conversation, the consumer must listen carefully to the questions which are being asked. If you're unsure of the answer, then advise the insurer that, look, I'm not sure of the answer at this point. Can I revert to you at a later stage with a correct answer? If a consumer does not understand the question, then say to the advisor, look, I don't understand. What are you trying to ask me? Give me examples of the information that you are looking for. That's at the sales stage. Once the policy incepts, though, the consumer must ensure
My that Money and Me with Demetra Naidoo every Tuesday from 8 to 9 p.m.
KFM 95.9.
And once again, if they don't understand, call the insurer. Get clarity, make sure that you understand what you have got yourself into.
So you raise a really important point. You need to read the policy carefully. So often with insurance companies today, I mean, because we're moving into a more digital age, you know, everything is done over the phone and, you know, documents are emailed to you, but you've signed up already on the phone. So it's not even, I mean, as important as it is, many of us don't actually read the fine print. What then do you do? I mean, everything is done over the phone, and you know, it's just, it's not as detailed as the policy that you're getting in your email, and sometimes you don't even get that. I mean, now you can sign up with your ID number and you can take our short-term insurance. You don't, there's no paperwork. We're moving into a paperless society. What then holds you except for that tape? And if you can't get that tape, then you're pretty much stuck.
Well, the point is that, you know, what constitutes the contract? And it's the sales recording, the schedule, the insurance policy, all those three mediums constitute the contract. And therefore, you know, if you've agreed to be bound during the sales conversation, then the terms and conditions are contained in your policy document. And that is what is going to dictate the relationship between you and your insurer going forward. So it's that I think if that doesn't convince somebody that or a consumer that, you know, that you need to read your document.
Besides having a claim rejected, what are the consequences when a consumer actually misrepresents themselves at the sales stage or any stage when doing this agreement, when signing up to this contract, whether verbally or physically?
Okay, so if there's a misrepresentation at sales stage, then Section 53 provides that, provided that the misrepresentation is material to its acceptance of the risk, then the insurer may void the policy, which means that the insurer would then refund any premiums that the insured has paid from inception of the policy till the date of the loss. So basically, both parties would go back to a position as if no contract had been entered into. The consequence of that doesn't just end there, because if a week later I'm now looking for alternative cover and I phone another insurer, I am then obliged to advise that insurer that, look, I had a previous insurance policy and that insurer cancelled my policy or voided the policy due to a misrepresentation or whatever was the basis on which the voidance took place. But there's also further consequence. So in addition to having your claim rejected, your policy voided, some insurers would actually do a recovery against you for any previous claims that they had settled. So say, for instance, I had submitted a windscreen claim previously, and I would then have to refund the insurer, because obviously the idea of the voidance is to put us back into the position that we were in had the contract not been entered into.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little bit confusing.
Well, the whole point is that, you know, it's to put the parties back in the position.
Okay.
Essentially, that's what it is, yeah.
Okay, so when you talk about the fact that the insurance company asks you if you've been rejected by any other insurance company, do they communicate amongst themselves? Can they actually go to that insurance company or go to, you know, all the insurance companies and say, you know, do you have any history on this client?
Yes, they do that. They would.
And that could also inform their decision on whether they grant you insurance going forward.
Yes, that could. But remember, they would only do that in the event of a claim. So they would not do that at sales stage.
But I suppose the bottom line is to be honest when you're actually taking out insurance, whether you want to take it out or not. Be honest up front, because there are repercussions, and this could also cause the claim not being paid out at some stage.
Well, insurance is a contract of good faith, which means that both parties must provide true and complete information at all times.
Darpana, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your time this evening. Darpana Harkison, Senior Assistant at the Ombudsman for Short Term Insurance.
My Money and Me with Sumitra Naidu, every Tuesday from 8 to 9 p.m.
Kaya FM 95.9. Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.